Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Dr. Hugh Ross's Paradox class. It's good to see everybody here. Wonderful to be back after missing a week. Paradox's class is usually so reliable. We're here every single week. And last Sunday, the church needed the space for something they thought was more important. I don't think so. But anyway, we're back. So I want to say thank you for the treats. As you walk by Dan back there in the back, tell him thank you for the pizza. Thank you, Dan, for the pizza. Thank you, everybody who has it on your heart to bring treats. If you take treats, bring treats. There's no schedule for it. Just bring when you can. I'm going to be teaching this morning. I'm going to be talking on near-death experiences, and I'll be here today, then next week, Hugh will be back, and then the week after that, on the 25th, I'll be finishing my talk. So it's going to be broken in two. You'll be breathlessly waiting for the end, I hope. I want to say thank you to everybody who is involved with this class at all, especially the people who set up and take down the thankless tasks that we have to do every week. Thanks to Mark and Val for putting this class together and all the... all the tech people, Jamie and Tim and Mark DeCaro, who's not here, who is in a moving van on his way to Boise, Idaho right now, moving his family. So if you can say a prayer for Mark, we'd appreciate it. And with Mark's absence, he's going to be moving permanently, probably the end of, what month is this, August. We're going to need another tech person back there. So if you happen to be technically inclined, and the Lord puts it on your heart that we need help, and you want to do it, let somebody here know. We would really, really appreciate that. What else have I got to say? Thank you to visitors. My friend Brad's here. Everybody say hi to Brad. I think that's it. Dave's not here, so we don't have a book table. As always, we're being recorded, and we are online, and we get as many or more people watching live online as we do in class, and sometimes during the week or two after class, we get people in the hundreds and even sometimes in the thousands watching this class. It's pretty exciting. So I guess let's say a prayer, and we will get to me. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this opportunity in this class to come and discuss things that evidences, ways of thinking that lead us closer to you, Lord, the intellectual and philosophical and historical side to our faith. We're so grateful for this class. This class, Hugh Ross has been doing this class for 49 years, Lord, and we thank you for it. Thank you so much for this opportunity every week to come and discuss in a friendly environment where we can test each other's faith and even disagree sometimes. We just thank you for that opportunity. Bless you. Thank you for the people that are here. I ask that I am honoring to you, Lord, in the talk that I'm going to give, and that each of us go our own way, honoring you and blessing you this afternoon, Lord. Thank you. In Jesus' name, amen. Okay, we're going to have fun this morning. I have got a talk that I'm going to do on near-death experiences, and what I want to do is tell you that there is scientific evidence for, and we need my, there it is. This is an apologetics class. We've always talked about evidences that support the Christian faith from historical, philosophical, scientific points of view. And I'm going to present something this morning and 2 weeks from now that I hope will really encourage you, as it has me. There's scientific evidence that defeats naturalism. Naturalism is the idea among many scientists and people in the world today that there is nothing supernatural. There is only atoms and molecules and energy, and everything can be explained in those terms. That's always been antithetical to the Christian faith, actually any religious faith, that believes there is a supernatural world, there is a God, there is supernatural beings in that world. Now, many people of faith will say, well, you can't prove it one way or another. Many people, I don't mean people of faith, people on the opposite side of faith will say, you can't prove that. That's just a matter of faith. Well, what I'm going to do in this talk is provide what I believe is actual evidence that there is a spiritual world, that there is a supernatural, there is supernaturalism for angels and spiritual beings, for an afterlife, and even for God. We are going to talk about near-death experiences and the Christian faith. I want to talk about the science of near-death experiences, and I use that word science deliberately. Science as opposed to ideas that have no evidence, because I'm going to provide you with what I believe is a lot of really good evidence. Let's start out by asking some basic questions. Near-death experiences, and from now on I'm going to call them NDEs, because I don't want to say that 400 times. Near-death experiences are now NDEs. What are they? Are they real experiences of the real world, or are they just hallucinations or dreams? What bearing do they have on our faith? And how should we think about them? I want to make the case in this talk that NDEs are real experiences and have a profound bearing on our faith, that they confirm much of the Christian worldview. They even, I'm going to say this, in my opinion, have something to say, and we'll do this in 2 weeks, something to say about how is it that everyone who has ever lived in the history of the world will have an opportunity to say yes or no to God. I believe that. I don't know how that works out. Maybe there's some evidence here on how that works out. And I believe that NDEs also have a lot to say about artificial intelligence and the ability of machines to ever gain consciousness and that kind of thing. We're probably going to talk about that next week. I personally have found the material studying NDEs really encouraging. I've been studying them on and off for many years. I did a talk in this class about 10 years ago on them, but I felt like there was so much more material, and I just love talking about it, and I've read a lot more, so I thought I'm gonna do it again. And I hope that you get as excited about it as I do, because it really has a lot of profound implications for our faith. The evidence that I'm going to present, I believe, is pretty easy to understand. If somebody comes to you and says, I'm a physicalist or a naturalist or I'm an atheist and I don't believe in anything supernatural, you can pull this argument out of your back pocket and you can say, well, wait a minute, what about NDEs? How do you explain these? And I'm going to get into detail about what I'm talking about. All right, I'm going to tell a story. This is a true story, and there's thousands of true stories that I could have picked from. I'm going to tell the story of a woman named Pam Reynolds. One of the reasons that I like her right off the bat was she was born in the same year I was born, 1956. Terrific year. She was a singer-songwriter from Atlanta, Georgia. In 1991, so she would have been 35 years old, she started to develop some pretty serious symptoms, and nobody knew what it was. She was feeling dizziness, loss of speech, difficulty moving. She had a lot of tests done, nothing conclusive. Finally, she had a CAT scan done, and she had a very large aneurysm at the base of her brain that was putting pressure on the brain and causing a lot of these symptoms. And the place that it was, the exact location was, it was basically inoperable. And she had, the doctor said, you basically have a 0% chance of survival. So, as anyone would with that diagnosis, she started looking around for somebody that could help her. And she was referred to a Dr. Spetzer, S-P-E-T-Z-E-R, in Phoenix. Dr. Spetzer pioneered a procedure called hypothermic cardiac arrest. It's basically cardiac arrest on purpose. It's an extreme procedure, but it was the only one that would give her a chance at survival and allow for surgery to take out the aneurysm. Now, here's what she went through in 91. First, of course, she gets the sedative, puts you to sleep. They put tape over her eyes so she couldn't see anything. They blocked the ear canals completely, except for a little speaker that clicked every minute at 90 decibels, really loud, so that if there was any consciousness at all, she would move or object. So ears are blocked, this clicking's going on. The body was cooled to 60 degrees. Now, normally our body temperature is 98.6. So she was cooled way down, 60 degrees. They stopped the heartbeat, they stopped the breathing, there was no brain activity, her brain stem was shut down. At this point, they opened a surgery in her leg. They physically tipped the operating table and drained the blood out of her body. There were about 20 people involved in this surgery, so she was clinically dead for an hour. Now, from a naturalistic point of view, this person has not going to have any awareness or any consciousness of anything. They're basically dead. Now, Pam claims afterward that she had a near-death experience during this time. I want to read several things from the quotes that she has said, so you get a sense for what's going on. The first thing that happened was she started to hear a tone, a musical tone, and she said, these are quotes. She said, the further out of my body I got, the more clear the tone became. I had the impression it was like a road, like a frequency that you go on. I remember seeing several things in the operating room when I was looking down. It was the most aware that I think I have ever been in my entire life. Keep that in mind. The most aware I've ever been in my entire life. It was brighter and more focused and clearer than normal vision. There was so much in the operating room that I didn't recognize, and so many people. She recalled being surprised that the team had only partially shaved her head. Okay, remember that. She noticed that. She also recalled seeing the bone saw that Dr. Spetzer used to excise a section of her skull. This is another quote. She said, that saw thing looked like an electric toothbrush and it had a dent in it. A groove at the top where the saw appeared to go into the handle, but it didn't. And the saw had interchangeable blades, too, but these blades were in what looked like a socket wrench case. I heard the saw crank up. She found this sound very unpleasant. Someone said something about my veins and arteries being very small, saying that it was a female voice. At this stage in the operation, a female cardiac surgeon, having determined that the arteries in Reynolds' right leg were too small to handle the degree of blood flow required by the heart-lung machine, she opened the left leg as well. This is before they drained the blood. This is a long quote, so bear with me. This is what she says happened to her and the experience that she had. She said there was a sensation like being pulled, but not against your will. I was going on my own accord because I wanted to. I have different metaphors to try to explain this. It was like the Wizard of Oz being taken up in a tornado vortex, only you're not spinning around like you've got vertigo. You're very focused and you have a place to go. The feeling was like going up in an elevator real fast, and there was a sensation, but it wasn't a bodily physical sensation. It was like a tunnel, but it wasn't a tunnel. At some point very early in the tunnel vortex, I became aware of my grandmother calling me. But I didn't hear her call me with my ears. It was a clearer hearing than with my ears. I trust that sense more than I trust my own ears. The feeling was that she wanted me to come to her, so I continued with no fear down the shaft. It's a dark shaft that I went through, and at the very end, there was this very little tiny pinpoint of light that kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The light was incredibly bright, like sitting in the middle of a light bulb. It was so bright that I put my hands in front of my face, fully expecting to see them, and I could not. But I knew they were there, not from a sense of touch. Again, it's terribly hard to explain, but I knew they were there. I noticed that as I began to discern different figures in the light, and they were all covered with light, they were light. Reminds you of Revelation, doesn't it? Where light comes from the object, not just the sun. And had light permeating all around them. They began to form shapes I could recognize and understand. I could see that one of them was my grandmother. I don't know if it was reality or projection, but I would know my grandmother, the sound of her, anytime, anywhere. Everyone I saw, looking back on it, fit perfectly into my understanding of what that person looked like at the best during their lives. Let me read that again. Everyone I saw, looking back on it, fit perfectly into my understanding of what that person looked like at their best during their lives. So if you die at 105 and go to heaven, you're going to look like you did when you were 25 or 30. I recognized a lot of people. My Uncle Gene, was there. So was my great-great-aunt, who was really a cousin. On Papa's side of the family, my grandfather was there. They were specifically taking care of me, looking after me. They would not permit me to go further. It was communicated to me. That's the best way I know how to say it, because they didn't speak like I'm speaking, that if I went all the way into the light, something would happen to me physically. They would be unable to put this back into, put this, they would be unable to put this me back into the body me, like I had gone too far and they couldn't reconnect. So they wouldn't let me go anywhere or do anything. I definitely recall the sensation of being nurtured and being fed and being made strong. I know it sounds funny because obviously it wasn't a physical thing, but inside the experience I felt physically strong, ready for whatever. My grandmother didn't take me back through the tunnel or even send me back or ask me to go. She just looked up at me. I expected to go with her, but it was communicated to me that she just didn't think she could do that. My uncle said he would do it. He's the only one who took me back through the end of the tunnel. Everything is fine, was fine. I did want to go. But then I got to the end of it and saw the thing, my body. I didn't want to go into it. It looked terrible, like a train wreck. Imagine what it looked like with all the blood sucked out of it. It looked like what it was, dead. I believe it was covered. It scared me and I didn't want to look at it. It was communicated to me that it was like jumping into a swimming pool. No problem, just jump right into the swimming pool. I didn't want to go, but I guess I was late or something because my uncle pushed me. I felt a definite repelling and at the same time a pulling from the body. The body was pulling and the tunnel was pushing. It was like diving into a pool of ice water. It hurt. The assistants finished the operation to the sound of rock music. This is great. Listen to this. They were playing Hotel California. And the line was, you can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. I mentioned later, this is Pam speaking, I mentioned later to Dr. Brown that that was incredibly insensitive, and he told me that I needed to sleep more. When I regained consciousness, I was still on the respirator. After her experience, she lost all fear of death. The account that Pam Reynolds gave in her final interview before she died suggests that the first verification of her out-of-body memories were actually provided by the medical staff soon afterwards. Listen to this. She says, "I thought I had had hallucinations, and when I talked with my family and my husband, we were all joking about it. That made everyone laugh with the exception of the nurses, the doctor, the anesthesiologist, and the neurophysiologists. They did not seem to find it funny, and they hardly dared look at me. In fact, they knew that I was not hallucinating and that this had actually occurred. They had never heard of such things before. I thought maybe it was my imagination and I had a dream, but they told me that this was not the case and what I saw really happened. They kept telling me that it was not a hallucination." Dr. Spetzer confirms this as quoted on TV program. He said, "What she related so quickly after surgery was remarkably precise as to some details that went on in the surgery." Wow. Okay. Before we go much further, let's define what a near-death experience is, an NDE. This is a dictionary definition. It says an unusual experience taking place on the brink of death and recounted by a person after recovery, typically an out-of-body experience or a vision of a tunnel of light. Now, what I want to do in this talk is draw a line between what can be a hallucination or a dream and what was somebody actually seeing something in the real world. When I first started studying NDE, when I first started hearing about them, I just blew it off. I just kept thinking, well, that's something that a dying brain could do, right? It was just something that you experience like a dream. But the more I looked into it, the more I realized that can't be true. Pam's experience is typical. There's now thousands and thousands of near-death experiences. There's even a couple of peer-reviewed journals dedicated to near-death experiences. This is becoming mainstream. This is not a fringe thing. There's a lot of doctors. You can find these guys online, and their story is very similar. They say, "I was a materialist, I didn't believe any of this, I started looking into it, and now I am no longer a materialist. I believe these are real experiences." Some of them have become Christians, some of them are on their way. But they no longer believe that this is, that what we see is all there is. And they're making that decision based on the evidence. That's the thing. Make sure you understand that. This is not faith. It's not jumping off into something that you say the Bible says this is true, so I'm going to believe it, which is fine. I support that. But this is separate from that. This is real evidence pointing to the idea that we do not live in a simply materialistic universe. What are the history of NDEs? Why are we hearing about this so much now? Both Plato and Democritus from a couple of thousand years ago talked about NDEs. There were times when, really unusual times, when somebody at battle would be mortally wounded or looked like they were going to die, and they would have an out-of-body experience. For whatever reason, they didn't die, they came back and they told the story of it. But they're really unusual in history. And the reason is, if you think about it, it's pretty obvious. It's only now in the last couple of generations that we have the ability to resuscitate people. So what does that say? It probably means that near-death experiences have been a normal part of the death process from the beginning. But now we have the ability to bring some people back from them and they can tell the story. Like I say, there's dozens of books on this. There's a lot of accounts. If you go online and put in near-death experiences, be careful. I think there's stuff, a lot of them out there are made up. But there's a guy named Moody who wrote the first book, I think it was called Life After Life in 1975. And he's the one, Life After Death, I mean. Life After Life, sorry. I'll get that for you in 2 weeks. But Raymond Moody. And he's the one that coined the phrase and started a lot of people thinking about this. So if you study it, just be careful. You know, try to stick to the people who have been doing this, the people that are actual MDs and neurosurgeons, and not just people who are on the internet telling a story. But if you look up Pam Reynolds online, you'll find dozens of stories about her. It's difficult at this point for materialists to refute this. And if you notice in a lot of the debates about whether God exists or not, people will bring up near-death experiences, those who support the idea that God exists. And the other side, they don't really have much of a response. The problem is, if these are true, if when somebody comes out, is dying, Pam Reynolds had no signs of life. From a materialistic standpoint, there was no way she could maintain her consciousness. No heartbeat, no brain waves, brainstem was dead, she was 60 degrees. And she had this rich, vivid experience, including seeing the operating table that she was on and recounting several actual things that happened. You can't explain that from just a dream or a hallucination. So again, it's easy to discount these stories until you start to really look at them. And the part that excites me the most, the part that really got me interested in this, is these near-death experiences that are what we call veridical. And all that word means is that they are verifiable. So Pam, think about the story. She described in detail what the bone saw looked like. She heard the conversation when the woman with a female voice, the nurse, said that her veins and arteries were too small. She recalls hearing the song Hotel California. All of this happened in the operating room, in reality, in the real world, and while she was out, while she was 60 degrees with her whole body shut off. This is what confirms these stories to me. They will tell you, people who have been through near-death experience say, this is more real than the real world. Wow. If our Christian faith is correct, that has to be a true statement. What do we say about this world? We're just passing through, right? That the real world is somewhere else. Somehow else, we don't know where it is. This corroborates that, doesn't it? So the fact that these people see things in the real world, and this is, like I say, there's hundreds and thousands of examples of this. This is not just a one-off. This is becoming mainstream. They see real things in the real world when they had no capability of doing it, even if they were fully awake and aware on the operating table. Sometimes they see things that they couldn't have seen, even if they were not under anesthesia. I'll give you a couple of other examples. There's one where a woman claims that she was on the operating table and she went into cardiac arrest and she started to have a near-death experience. She floated up out of her body. She went up to the roof of the hospital. And on the roof of the hospital was an old red tennis shoe that somebody had thrown up there who knows how long ago. It was all beat up and weathered, right? They were able to revive her. She came back into her body. She recounted what she saw, and a couple of the people from the operating room went up on the roof, and there the red tennis shoe was. Wow. How do you account for that from a purely materialistic point of view? And a lot of these happen to people who are not particularly religious. There's no bias here. These are just doctors and nurses doing their job, people, average people who may or may not know the Lord who have these experiences. Another one, this one I love. This woman says she came up out of her body on the operating room, and she floated up and she noticed there was a machine in the operating room which was like the size of a tall refrigerator. It was like 7 feet tall. So nobody could see the top of it. But there was a 12-digit number, like a serial number, on the top of this machine. And she said, well, I've got ADD. People with ADD, you see a big number, you want to memorize the number. She memorizes the number. She comes back into her body. She recounts the number to whoever it was, a nurse or whatever. They get on a ladder. They look at the top of the machine, and that's the 12 digits. Now, we're going to go into this a little later, but one of the reasons this is really interesting is because if you have ADD, where is it? Is it in your body? If it's in her body, she shouldn't have had ADD when she was out of her body. Wow. Is that part of her personality then? We're going to go into that. I want to give you a, make this point. You can't have a made-up dream or hallucination that is factual in every way unless you actually saw whatever it was that happened. I wrote a little made-up story here. Go with it, and then I'm going to ask some questions at the end, okay? Man and wife are in bed, getting up in the morning, and the man says, honey, I had a vivid dream last night. I walked out of our front door, and our next door neighbor, Bob, racing down the street in a new red Ford truck, and he was driving so fast, he missed his driveway and totaled his new car on the light post two doors down. He and his wife both got out of the car as if nothing happened and walked into their house. It was a strange dream. I can still hear the impact in my head. It seemed so real. And the wife says, that was no dream. Everything you just described actually happened last night. Okay. Stop right there. What are the possibilities? Is it possible that he actually dreamed that, disconnected from what really happened, with all of those details intact? Isn't that really unlikely? It's more likely that somehow he actually witnessed it. Maybe he was sleepwalking. Same thing with NDEs. These people recount things that actually happened in the real world. So to say that it's somehow a dream or a hallucination that they make up in their head is not a good explanation. Typical description of NDEs. They're hyper-real. They're more real than here. These accurate, detailed descriptions of events that actually happened. So when Pam Reynolds floated up out of her body and went to wherever she went, where was she? Where was Pam? What we like to think of as our soul or our spirit, Pam's spirit was above the operating table and then went wherever it was, but her body was dead. We are not our body. We are a spiritual being that inhabits a body. And our body is part of our identity. I'm 6'4". I'm left-handed. Those two things have given me, are a lot of how I think about myself. So part of my identity in my head is wrapped up in features that my body has. But my identity of who I am is not my body. It's my soul, the spirit, the part that lives on, the part that, if the Bible is correct, and I believe it is, we will get a new body to accompany that spirit. So let me take you through some questions here, in case you're really skeptical of this, which is a good thing. And I'm going to go for about 15 more minutes, and then we'll do questions, and I hope you have lots of questions. So if during a near-death experience someone perceives something in some detail that actually happened in real life, doesn't that mean they aren't dreaming or hallucinating, but actually conscious and aware of their surroundings? I think you have to answer yes. And if you don't agree, the mic's back there after I'm done. And if their center of consciousness, and I'm using that term, you know, we think as we walk around, where is our center of consciousness? Well, it's kind of behind our eyes We think of it as in our head. It's not in our kneecap or our hand. It's right here. And when you're having an NDE and your body is on the table, your center of consciousness is where you are, is where the soul is. You still are localized. It's not like all of a sudden you can see the whole universe at once. You're still in one place. And if their center of consciousness, when they observe these things, is a part separate from their physical body, doesn't that mean we really do have an immaterial soul that is distinct from our body? Another confirmation of a biblical idea. And if our soul is immaterial, but still us, doesn't that mean that there really is a spiritual world and that naturalism has to be a failed idea? So what part of us remains during near-death experience? This is really cool. I love this. This is going to be so much fun to go through this. All right. What features of personhood remain during an NDE? Well, Pam and the thousands of other people who have had an NDE claim that they saw things. They correspond with the real world. With what did they perceive them? Where did the photons of light go? We think of it, I see right now, I see you, because the light comes into my eyes, it goes, it's converted to an electrical signal, goes through the optic nerve into my brain, and I perceive that as seeing the world. But Pam's body and eyeballs and optic nerves and brain were on the operating table. With what did she see? I don't know. The only thing we can draw from that is that the spirit, the soul, has the ability to continue to perceive even without the body. Consciousness. I call it the sound and light show. You wake up in the morning and you open your eyes, and it's like a movie. It's like the best 3D AI assisted movie that can possibly exist, right? We see this show that goes on in front of us all day as we go through our day. And that continues in a near-death experience, which means that ability, the scientists who say that consciousness and awareness has to be explainable by naturalistic means are just wrong. Because that consciousness, Pam was still aware of what she was doing and where she was going. Cognitive ability. These people still have the ability to think and make choices. Personal identity. Okay, there's some Eastern religions that say that when we die, we just meld into a big pot of all the consciousnesses that have ever existed. Well, it looks like we maintain who we are, even to the point of people can recognize us, they can recognize our face and what sex we are and how they were related to us. We maintain our personality. That woman with ADD, right? She still had ADD when she was out of body. Localized existence, I just mentioned that. We don't all of a sudden can see the whole universe and we're everywhere all at once. We still are in one place at one time. We still have emotions. Sometimes these people sensed were afraid, but mostly they get this incredible sense of peace and love and don't want to leave when they go have an NDE. Now this is the one to me that's the most interesting and the most intriguing, because these people not only have this experience, but they come back and tell the story, which means that they remembered it. Well, where were those memories stored in the time between when they had the NDE and they got back in their body? Wow. That means our memory is not just in our body. Whatever that is that allows us to recall events, to remember things, to bring back ideas, isn't just in our body. It's in our spirit. Whatever that is, it's in our soul. Looks like, if you look at this list, is there any part of who we are that isn't on this list? It looks like we remain pretty much intact other than the physical characteristics of our body. We're not going to, it follows us, it continues. So, you know, the Bible talks about how we're not going to sleep after we go to heaven or wherever that is we go. Well, it makes sense because we don't have a body. The body is what needs the sleep, not our spirit. We don't get tired because we don't have a body. There's so many things, little details in the Bible that this makes sense of. Okay, I think I'm going to end there. In 2 weeks, well, next week Hugh will be back. In 2 weeks, I'll be back to finish. And I will now take questions. So the way this works is we'll alternate questions from online and live from you guys, and we're going to go till about 1:30. I think that clock's always about 5 minutes slow. So, okay. Hope you got some good questions. Hope you challenge me.
You ready, Ross?
Okay.
Valerie asks, are any Bible verses, are there any Bible verses that support the concept, especially dealing with Pam Lowry?
Uh-huh.
Are there any pertinent Bible verses that you could think of?
Well, I think of all the verses that talk about how eternal life, that how we will survive the death of our bodies, and that we are not just our body. I would say there's probably hundreds of verses that support the idea that we maintain our personality, we are responsible for what we do, and we continue our consciousness after we're dead.
I was asking about specific verses, but I've never read anything in the Bible that says near-death experience. So, but as you said, it's...
Yeah, That's a good question. I think there is one place, and I'll look into it, and when I come back in 2 weeks, I'll see if I can find that.
Yeah. Okay, very good. By the way, if any of you have a question that are in the class, come on up here. We alternate between online and real people. Eddie, do you have one? Or come on up here.
Ross, you mentioned that, how did you say it? So science, unless it somehow breaks through into a spiritual dynamic, it's not at poo-poo's all this. Is it possible that science may catch up to the reality of this somehow or other?
Yeah, I think most scientists are honest, sincere people just trying to do the best they can with what they know. And I think, okay, so in one of his books, Thomas Kuhn said, he was a philosopher of science, he said, new ideas, paradigm shifts don't happen because somebody provides better evidence. They happen because a lot of people who believe the old stuff die. Daniel Dennett just passed away. He was one of the most ardent, he would argue with me, every way he could. He was a thorough materialist. He believed that everything ultimately will be explainable by natural processes and materialistic ways of thinking. But as people who hold those views pass away, whatever it is in science, and new people come up and look at the evidence, the new evidence in a fresh way, the ideas are different. It's like Darwinian evolution with, you know, driven by mutation and natural selection. There's very few Darwinists even who believe that anymore. They believe there's got to be something else that's driving it. Mutation and natural selection isn't enough to provide all of the forms that we see in the history of paleontology, it's not powerful enough to do this. And it is changing. There's a lot of people, like I say, you go online, you listen to some of these people who say, I was a hard and fast materialist. I just believed what I was taught. I started to study the material. I'm not anymore. So I think when we can present it in the form of actual evidence like this, people will be open to it because they're scientists and it's evidence-based. So they may not like the implications. You know, it's not like giving people evidence that God exists and you're going to be responsible for your actions, right, has a lot more weight to it. There's going to be a lot bigger emotional reaction to that than saying, you know, you came up with some new theory about how the sun burns hydrogen, right? Nobody cares. It doesn't affect your life. But if you say, I have evidence that God exists and he's the Christian God of the Bible and we're all going to be accountable to him, and that's one thing I'm going to go into next week. It's really cool. One of the typical things that happens during a near-death experience is a life review where you're shown everything you ever did somehow in a couple of minutes, which again is another biblical idea that's supported in near-death experiences. So I think coming screaming and kicking, a lot of people will come and see that materialism doesn't work. There's so many ways it doesn't work. So yeah, I think it is really good. I'm hopeful for the future.
I got a question.
Go ahead.
You said on this experience of this lady, they drained her blood. Now, what was feeding the brain? If there's no blood, no oxygen to the brain.
What was what, Dan?
I said, if they drained the blood from this lady, what was feeding the brain oxygen?
Nothing was feeding the brain oxygen. She was at 60 degrees. All the blood was drained from her. She was in a state of suspended animation.
Well, how can a brain be without oxygen? The cells died only a few minutes.
It has to do with the temperature. When you're cool to that temperature, they had done this surgery before, and it is successful. It's like I don't know how to explain it. I'm not a medical doctor, but if you put the body in a particular state, and it had a lot to do with the temperature, you can revive people. And I forgot to say that the operation was a complete success. The reason they were able to take out the aneurysm was because aneurysms are a sac that fills with blood, and when there was no blood in her, they were able to just pull it out like a balloon that was popped. And she survived. She lived to 2011 when she died from heart failure. So I don't know how I missed that, but there we go. So can you go back to the mic?
Is this a follow-up?
Yeah.
Okay. Follow-up to what this gentleman was saying. There have been instances in the past where, for instance, people have fallen into icy streams and have been under the water for upwards of 20 minutes. And because their bodies were cooled so much, their metabolism slowed way down, and essentially they were brought out and resuscitated. And the cooling part keeps the metabolism way down, so that the need for oxygen and all that goes way down as well. So I think that's kind of a layman's explanation for me. I'm not a scientist, but that's the way I understand it. There you go. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Good morning.
Hi.
I was watching a debate recently, Richard Dawkins, I can't remember who it was with, but they mentioned the evidence coming from near-death experiences, and Richard Dawkins threw out the name of an author, which is my question, is what is the materialist's current answer to this? What are they trying to pull out and say, no, this is... I mean, what's their main argument? I don't remember the name of the author, but he basically, Richard Dawkins basically said, oh, you should look into this one author's writings on this, right? So obviously there's probably, the argument that's coming from the other side. Just want to get your insight into what arguments they're coming up with.
So the argument, the first way that they deal with it is they simply ignore it. They don't talk about it. The second way is they basically say all of this is made up. All of these people, somehow it's all explainable with science. The third way is that the part of the near-death experience that convinced me, the parts that are so convincing, the veridical parts, the one where they see things in the real world that correspond to the real world that they couldn't have seen on the operating table, they just ignore that part of it. And they talk about, you know, the rest of Pam's story, where she went through the tunnel and she met her loved ones and she saw the light and all that stuff. And they just say, well, somehow the brain's still aware enough to tell these stories. But they don't talk about the veridical parts. They don't talk about the verifiable parts. So this is why I say it's an easy argument to understand, and it's a really useful argument, because the arguments on the other side are not good. They're weak. They're just basically... well, somehow it's all explainable if, you know, we wait long enough and sprinkle it with pixie dust. So, okay. Go ahead, Mark.
Okay. Online question from Roger Raymer. Lowry's recollection of hearing the song Hotel California seems odd for an NDE. Why would this secular song be part of that experience?
Well, I don't know if you've ever heard this, but it's kind of an open secret that doctors, when they do surgery, often play really loud music during the operation. I heard one guy who all he played during his surgeries was really loud head-banging heavy metal. And so this was just one of the songs that they were playing during her surgery. And she recalled it.
This is really fascinating, but I had a couple of questions. One is there evidence that when people undergo procedures similar to the one that you described, I assume not everybody has an NDE experience, and do they understand why that might be the case, where some do and others do not? And then for people who have had the NDE experience, is it always a positive experience, or is it in some cases, do they come back and it was horrifying?
We're going to get into that next week. Not everyone, most people don't have an NDE. A lot of people go through cardiac arrest, they start to die, they're resuscitated, they come back, and the doctors now start... it's sort of a standard question now. Did you have any experience do you recall anything during your surgery? Most people will say no. But there's a significant percentage that do. I put that in the question, in the way my brain works, I form that, the question, what is God doing here? What is he trying to show us? And I'm gonna go into that next week, but I think as we slip away in our culture from a God-based culture, a culture where people know the Bible stories and know the Bible and are familiar with Christianity, you know, like we were in the 50s, and we're slipping away from that, I think God uses more and more really impactful ways of contacting the culture, of saying, you know, there's more to all of this than what you think. And in my opinion, that's part of what he's doing here. The second part of your, but why some people have them and some people don't, I can't know that. It just seems to be the truth of it. And we'll go into this much more detail next week. About 20% of the reported NDEs are hellish. just like the Dante's version of hell. You know, it's really horrible. And I say 20% reported because everybody in the field thinks it's probably a higher number than that. A lot of people come back and they don't want to talk about it. They just don't want to talk about it. So absolutely. And one thing I'll make this point next week, whether or not you have an NDE, whether or not you have an NDE that is positive, whether or not you have an NDE that is negative, seems to have nothing to do with your spiritual walk. There are a lot of good Christian people who have a hellish NDE. There's a lot of people who have no connection to God at all and say, that was the greatest experience of my life. I'm no longer afraid of death. I know there's an end, and the end's going to be good. So again, what's God doing here? You know, it's a really open question. But yeah, there's a lot of them that are really bad. Yeah.
We'll go ahead and take another class question. Come on, Nancy.
Okay, thanks. Thanks so much, Ross. This is not a boring subject, that's for sure. Thanks for all your research on it. I have a very simple question I've wondered about before with these kinds of things. You described Pam, who was clinically dead, and I've heard firsthand testimony from some people that were clinically dead that then came back to life. My question is just very simple. Are all of these called NDEs? Because some of these people are nearly dead. Some of these people are dead dead. Do you know what I mean? But are they, from your research, how dead do you have to be an NDE? Or is there another terminology? Is that making sense?
Well, nobody comes back to life, you know, 3 days after they're dead, except for one person we know. So that's out. But next week I'm going to get into some of this. There's been some, again, verified, peer-reviewed, written-up examples of people who were in the waiting room, right? Somebody has a near-death experience on the operating table, their friend or relative, whoever it is, and the person in the waiting room has the same experience as the person, has the same near-death experience as the person on the operating table. So this doesn't just happen close to death. There are times when people seem to be taken out of body and have experiences. And, you know, one thing I want to say is I had one person I talked to about this, and his response was, maybe this is all just spiritual. Maybe this is just Satan putting this stuff in our head to fool us. And I think I really, really want to come against that, because a lot of what happens are very, very hopeful. People see God, they see Jesus, not just God. It gives them hope and peace for the future. That's not something Satan's going to do. And would Satan give somebody a hellish NDE? No, he doesn't want to show them what that's about, because they're going to change their life and turn around. So I'm convinced that these are real experiences of the real world that continue into whatever realm that is, and that all of that is, it's real. It's really out there. And again, this has been extremely encouraging to me. I hear this stuff and it's like, see, we read the Bible, we're told to believe what the Bible says, we do, but then here's this whole other body of evidence that supports so much of what's in there. I just think that's really cool.